Happy anniversary.
It's beautiful.
She has several deep lacerations, internal bleeding.
Sorry to hear about your wife.
Is she okay?
The man's done it before. He'll do it again. We can take care of him for you.
Who are you?
I represent an organization that loves this city. We're tired of watching it go to hell.
I really don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. This wouldn't cost you anything financially, but we may ask a favor of you at some point in the future.
Who is this?
Hey, Will.
What do you want?
Just a quick talk. Relax.
Where'd you go? You okay?
We just need you to do one thing.
Nobody said anything in the agreement about killing anybody. So get the hell out of my life.
We should go to the cops. We tell them everything.
Some of them are cops.
When it's done, you call me.
A promise is a promise, Will.
You have no idea what this guy is capable of.
Where have you been? That I heard you walking around.
Sir, we have a warrant for your arrest for murder.
What the hell is happening?
I'm done.
Well, come back. I want to talk to you.
How long have you been following me?
Let's not forget what we did for you.
We're just a few citizens seeking justice.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike Tecuccio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing great.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that.
Kept to a schedule? Like, it's crazy.
I know. It's weird. It's very rare that we were able to do that. I'm sure it will unravel in horrible ways in the next few weeks. But for the time being, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're welcome, listeners.
Now, Mike, would you believe that the screenplay for the movie we're talking about today was once featured on the 2009 Blacklist?
Wait, what? That's a thing, first off.
Yes. So are you familiar with what the Blacklist is?
Like, in a communist sense.
Okay,
but not...
no. In a screenwriter sense, the Blacklist is an annual list of the best unproduced screenplays in Hollywood.
Oh.
Yeah. That's
a very different kind of blacklist.
Yeah, I probably should have cleared what you actually knew that was before we started the podcast. But here we are. Now, a lot of times, the scripts that get featured on the Blacklist do end up becoming films later. And that's exactly what happened with today's film, 2012's Seeking Justice. Now, based on what you saw in this movie, would you believe this movie was actually on the Blacklist?
Yeah.
Really?
Wait. I would believe it was unproduced, but not not in a way that's like, how could this not have been made?
Right. Yeah, no.
Maybe not.
Again, this is the Blacklist is for the best unproduced screenplays in Hollywood.
Oh, whoops.
And Seeking Justice is Seeking Justice. Now, originally, this movie was titled The Hungry Rabbit Jumps, which is a shocker, I know, if you've seen the movie.
Wow, what a twist.
Seeking Justice is, I think, where a trend begins to set for Nicolas Cage. To have this released so soon after Trespass kind of set the image of Cage as an actor who is starting to appear more frequently in these kind of generic thrillers that go very quickly from the theater to home video. This is the kind of movie that Donald Kaufman was writing in Adaptation.
Yes.
This is The Three, but in real life. But I think when the project was first coming together, everything probably looked really good on paper. If you think about it. Because like I said, this script was on the Blacklist. You've got A-list star Nicolas Cage, critically acclaimed actor Guy Pearce, and January Jones, star of a series that had just recently become a critical giant and Emmy winner, Mad Men. On top of that, there's a couple of notable producers on this movie. One is Ram Bergman, who is best known for his partnership with Rian Johnson. He's produced all of Rian Johnson's movies, including Star Wars The Last Jedi. And another producer on this, Mike, Spider-Man himself, Tobey Maguire.
You know, I think I saw that credit, but I didn't, like, process any of it. And I was like, huh, weird.
Yeah, but yeah, Tobey Maguire had some kind of involvement in this movie. I don't know what, didn't do that much research, but his name's on the credits, so there is that. And then the movie was directed by Roger Donaldson, who's actually a pretty dependable name. He was the director behind films like Cocktail with Tom Cruise, Species, Dante's Peak, 13 Days... You Dante's Peak fan over here?
Yeah. We're going to have a subcast about Dante's Peak.
Yes, that'll be the After Dark for this podcast. Yeah. 13 Days he also did, and The Bank Job with Jason Statham. Wow. So this movie had a lot going for it, really. And then it came out. And critical consensus was not good. It currently holds a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it bombed at the box office, opening at number 27 in the U.S.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's real bad. On a budget of $30 million, it did manage to pull in about $12 million worldwide. So Nicolas Cage stars as Will Gerard, an English teacher married to Laura Gerard, played by January Jones, right around the height of Mad Men. At the beginning of the movie, Laura is assaulted and raped, and Cage is approached by Simon Cook to get revenge on the guy. Simon Cook is played by Guy Pearce, and I'd say this seems kind of beneath him, but he also starred in Lockout this same year. side note, though, Lockout is fucking awesome.
I've never seen it, actually.
I've only seen it in theaters. I saw it the one time. I've never seen it since, and I don't think I ever will watch it again, just because I want to preserve it as awesome in my memory.
That seems fair.
I don't want to, like, destroy the illusion of Lockout being great. from there, Harold Perrineau plays Cage's friend Jimmy, and you'll recognize him from his roles in shows like Lost and Oz. Meanwhile, Jennifer Carpenter from Dexter plays Laura's friend Trudy. And Walking Dead fans have got a couple of familiar faces here. Xander Berkeley, who plays Gregory on the show, is here as Lieutenant Durgan. And this is actually his fourth time popping up in a Nicolas Cage movie after leaving Las Vegas, The Rock, and Kick-Ass. This is a quadruple reunion we got going on here, Mike. And my all-time favorite Walking Dead character is in this movie, Mike. Irony Singleton, better known as my boy T-Dog.
That's where I knew that guy from.
Plays a guy named Scar, one of the members of the group hunting Cage down. And T-Dog was my favorite character because I hate the dialogue in The Walking Dead, and he never said anything. He would always just stand around in the background. I was very bummed when they killed him off. Now, the film was written by Robert Tannen and Todd Hickey, and it's really the only major film they've worked on as writers, though Todd Hickey seems to regularly work as a cinematographer, and he even shot an episode of the Aquabats Super Show, so there's that. I'm a big Aquabats fan, so I was pretty excited about that. And the movie was directed by Roger Donaldson 4 years after the release of The Bank Job, and 3 years before his next film, The November Man, with Pierce Brosnan, which, as you might remember, was also written by the guy who wrote Trespass.
There's too much. We need a conspiracy board.
I have a whole corkboard behind me with strings going everywhere.
Exactly.
Most recently, he directed a documentary in 2017 called McLaren. Now, Seeking Justice was released on March 16th, 2012. And if you were like most people and not seeing it that weekend, you had a bunch of great options at the theater. The only major wide release that weekend was Phil Lord and Chris Miller's comedic take on an 80s teen TV show, 21 Jump Street, which is, of course, a masterpiece. Then, in limited release, the Duplass Brothers film, Jeff Lives at Home, hit theaters, which I've always really liked and had a pretty amazing experience watching that in the theater with my friend EJ, who saw so much of himself in Jason Segel's character that he had an existential crisis in the middle of the theater. It was amazing. I don't know if you... You know EJ.
I do.
And I don't know if you've seen Jeff Lives at Home.
I feel like I have now.
Okay, well, the opening of that movie is Jason Segel, like, talking into a tape recorder after he has smoked a bunch of weed and he's hanging out in his mom's basement. And he starts talking, and he's like, "I watched Signs again last night." Which was the most EJ thing of all time, and he, like, started freaking out in the theater. Finally, another movie was released that weekend that EJ actually got me to watch, so it all kind of comes full circle. And it's one I still reference all the time, Casa de mi Padre, a parody of Spanish soap operas starring Will Ferrell.
Interesante,
Mike. For some reason, that one line, Interesante, has stuck in my head for like 6 years at this point. It's pretty wild. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Seeking Justice reads, after his wife is assaulted, a husband enlists the services of a vigilante group to help him settle the score. Then he discovers they want a favor from him in return. So, Mike, Seeking Justice is definitely a movie that exists. So what are your overall thoughts on this film?
So to continue the trend for the last couple episodes, this is a movie that I feel like should have worked.
I feel like we should just record you saying that once so we can play it back every episode now on for a while.
That's not a bad plan, actually. we could just pre-record every episode and we'll just, like, edit us, like, we'll leave in, like, you know, the voicemail things where it's like, you've reached the phone of, and then we say the movie name, but we start the whole episode.
Yes.
Anyway, Seeking Justice, like, I feel like it could have been so much fun. It could have been an intense thriller. It has this, what should be a great cast, what should be an interesting storyline. It just, everything feels so flat. The action, quote-unquote, is barely there. The suspense and twists are barely there. Performances, for the most part, barely there. There's a couple here or there that I was like, yeah, I want the movie that guy thinks he's in. but instead we get this other thing where, like, not really anything's happening. This movie about a vast conspiracy, you know, like a Hitchcockian thriller.
Right.
We just don't really get anything near what that term means.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think this is going to be a tough one, and it'll probably be a pretty short episode, because I feel like I forgot everything that happened in this movie as soon as the credits rolled.
Yes, yeah.
It's weird, because I didn't, like, hate the experience of watching Seeking Justice.
No.
I wasn't, like, actively bored. I was a little bored, but I wasn't, like, actively bored, and it's not very good, but I would say I was, like, sort of compelled while I was watching the movie, you know? But it's kind of like, it's the movie equivalent of, like, a book that you buy at the airport just to have something to do on the plane.
Like, oh, I forgot my book at home.
Yeah.
Pick this up, I guess.
Whatever John Grisham's got out right now, let's see what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. It, you know, in the moment, like, sure. I was, you know, I think mildly compelled is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Just overall, nothing, there's no real hook there, and there's just not enough to sell me to have made that hour and 50 minutes been very worth it.
Yeah, definitely. So what did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie? He plays the lead character. He is stuck in this conspiracy. Basically, the plot of the movie is that January Jones is raped at the beginning, and when Cage is at the hospital with her, Guy Pearce approaches him and says, we'll kill the guy who assaulted your wife in exchange for a favor from us at some point. A favor for us at some point. And Cage is like, yeah, okay. And then... And then the rest of the movie is, you know, Cage having to do this favor, and they want him to kill this guy for them. And they tell him that he's like a sex offender. So the idea is that this group is killing people, but they're only killing bad people. So there's like a little bit of a moral quandary going on for like a little bit, and then that kind of disappears. So Cage stuck in the middle of all this. What do you think of his performance, Mike?
I think for the most part he's okay. I'll go better than that. He's pretty good, I think.
Okay.
I had a decent amount of fun with him, with Cage's performance. He's sort of playing, you know, he's playing a very subdued role. He's this boring high school English teacher that gets wrapped up in this grand conspiracy way over his head. And it's fun to see that, I think, from in like a meta perspective. Like within the movie, I didn't really care that much. But like as me having watched Cage for... what episode number is this?
I believe this is episode 62.
Yeah, in 61 other movies, where he's like going insane and doing all this crazy Kate freakout stuff. To see that not really happen, it was kind of fun to watch him be like his Big Daddy, but not the superhero parts. If that makes sense. Well, not the actually Big Daddy's pretty goofy.
A
superhero.
Yeah, I was gonna say. There's definitely more subdued Cage roles. I think like 8mm would be a decent example.
Yeah, or like the Weatherman.
I mean the Weatherman has more of like a comedic bent to it though. It's different.
Yeah,
I feel.
But I just mean like his character as like this straight man.
Yeah. How about the Family Man? The Family Man would be
the Family Man. That's a very good yes. So to preemptively answer your next question, I think the Family Man is a great comparison to me.
Yeah, definitely. I think Cage is fine in the movie, but it's not the Cage that, like I want to see in this type of movie. And if that's the case, then the movie has to be really good for that. For him to be doing like a more subdued role and stuff like that, like that's fine. I'm down for it. Cage is a good actor, but like the movie has to be better than like just a standard boilerplate, like that kind of thing. Because otherwise, I'm just wondering, like, why isn't Cage going nuts? I want to see some Cage action. going, yeah. You know? Like, at least with Trespass, that let him go a little nuts. Like, he was able to...
A little?
Well, he wanted to go even more nuts. He wanted to be Ben Mendelsohn's character, remember?
That's true.
But yeah, that movie lets him scream the entire time. So that's fun. This is, like, a pretty standard performance. But I think he's at least better than January Jones as the wife in the movie. Here's the thing about January Jones. I think she got a lot better as an actress over the years. But even on Mad Men, like, that's a show that has a very specific kind of stylized acting. And I think January Jones fit into that show, but she was always, like, the weak link in terms of acting performance. Like, I think she was hired because she looks exactly like Grace Kelly. And put her in, like, a 60s setting, and it's like, holy shit, like, she's the perfect actress for Betty Draper. I would never recast that role. Just in terms of acting ability, she wasn't quite there yet. And I remember she was in X-Men First Class the same year, or, like, a year before, and I remember she was really rough in that movie, too. But she got a lot better as she went on. Like, she was in the main cast of Last Man on Earth, the TV show, where she ended up being really funny. She was good on that show. But this is, you know, 2011, 2012 era January Jones, where she was not that good.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely feels like a phoning it in performance, which Cage does too a little bit. But I don't know if Cage ever really just, like, phones it in, even when he's playing the flat, boring everyman character.
Exactly. There's a consciousness to his choices as an actor.
Yes.
That is compelling, and that's why we have this podcast, I believe.
Yeah.
But I do kind of wish that he had actually, in Trespass, he wanted to switch roles with Ben Mendelsohn. I wish in this movie he had switched roles with Guy Pearce. I think if Cage had the Guy Pearce role, holy shit, like, what could have been, you know?
Guy Pearce's character is the one I'm referring to, where I wish it was the movie that he thought he was in.
Okay.
He's, like, just straight villain, like...
Right.
Like, and he's playing a... direct to DVD thriller villain, like, and that's what I want out of this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot like Drive Angry, you know. I want Drive Angry.
You want Drive Angry, like, now? You weren't a fan of Drive Angry.
I'm still not a fan of Drive Angry, but I want that, like, level of ham in these kinds of movies.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
You know,
Yeah, but I think if you put Cage in the Guy Pearce role, I think he probably would have nailed it. And then I think Guy Pearce probably might have been able to do something pretty cool with the hero role. You know, I think he might have been able to bring something else to that role. So, you know, I think if they had switched him up to the old switcheroo.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have been sued by John Carpenter for this one. So, like, that's dope.
It's a deep cut Lockout joke for...
for all my Lockout fans.
Have you actually seen Lockout, Mike?
No.
Oh, man, it's so good. You should watch it. Except don't, because I want to preserve the memory and I don't want you to sell it for me.
Okay, fine.
I think I might still like it. It's taken in space. I feel like...
It's not to love.
There's nothing about that sentence I don't already love. Anyway, so you already kind of preemptively answered the question, how does this role fit into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play so far? We kind of referenced The Family Man and some of the more restrained roles. It does feel of a piece with Trespass, right? Like, it seems like they're from the same family of thriller, as in they're completely nonsense and they basically went straight to video.
I will throw in Knowing also, it's this kind of...
But Knowing is great, though, so, like, so you're going to have to back off.
I mean, in terms of his role, where it's this kind of, like, nerdy professor, you know, teacher type guy.
Actually, you're right.
When uncovers this vast conspiracy and is, like, panicking the whole movie.
Actually, yes. Yeah, you're 100% right. Actually, I did think of Knowing when when we first panned over to his school and he was doing the classroom and he was teaching Shakespeare or whatever. And it was the same kind of, like, very basic lessons that he was teaching. to a Knowing when he was just like, yeah, gravity, it's cool, man. And, like,
yeah, what's up, Hemsworth the Lesser?
Yeah, Hemsworth the Lesser. And this one, it's like, hey, do you guys know Shakespeare was the original rapper or whatever? And that's not a line for the movie, but that's, like, the basic gist of what's going on. Also, this movie has a New Orleans setting, which has popped up in a few Nicolas Cage movies at this point. Xandali, Sunny, and, of course, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. So this is, I think, at least the fourth one. There might be more. I'm not 100% on that. But I think it's interesting that, like, a couple of locations have started recurring among Cage movies. Like, he's in Vegas a lot, too, right? With Leaving Las Vegas and Con Air. And I feel like there was one... Oh, Honeymoon in Vegas. Doi. and then I would say New York City, but that's in all movies. So
That's everything.
That doesn't count. Cool. Well, what are the moments in the movie that stood out to you, Mike? What are the scenes that, like, grab your attention?
Well, there's definitely a beginning and a middle and an end. So.
Okay, so you were weren't as riveted by the dramatic candy buying scene as I was.
No, although I did really like at the end. Well, hold on, in the monster truck scene, monster truck rally.
Yeah, I'm guessing people listening to this probably haven't seen the movie.
No, probably.
And they're going to be so confused and they're like, "What? Candy bar scene? Monster truck scene? What the fuck is this movie?" It's not as exciting as it sounds.
Yeah. Despite what you may think about candy buying. But I did actually really like that, like, Cage making fun of Guy Pearce's character by having him do all these just inane things before meeting him.
Yes. That was really funny, actually. Because throughout the movie, Guy Pearce does the thing where it's like, he calls Nick Cage and is like, "All right, now go out to the store. Go buy a pack of gum. Go do a handstand in the bathroom and then come back."
Come out the back here. Door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, just these elaborate things, but they really don't need to happen.
No.
You know? And so, but I think the apex of that is when Guy Pearce first approaches Cage, and he says, like, we can kill the guy who raped your wife if you want. We can do that. And Cage is like, well, I don't know. And he's like, well, listen, if you change your mind, go out and buy two candy bars from the vending machine, and then we'll know. And I was like, all right.
Okay.
Couldn't Cage just, like, tell you? Because Cage does tell him. That's the thing. The way that scene plays out, Cage is like, yeah, no, I can't do this. And Guy Pearce is like, you know, don't hesitate because, you know, it was kind of a time issue. And Cage is like, well, I don't know. Wait, yes. and then Guy Pearce is like, go out and buy two forever bars from the vending machine, and then we'll know. And I'm like, wait, A, like, he just told you. And B... You just said there was a time issue.
Yeah, what are we doing?
You got sent him to buy two candy bars very slowly and dramatically while the security guard watches.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the friendliest looking security guard of all time, by the way. He's just kind of, like, looking at him, like, buying those candy bars.
What you gonna pick? Basically, is his whole character arc.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But I want to talk about the phrase, the hungry rabbit jumps in this movie, Mike. Because this is the new Primerlinian from... Sorcerer's Apprentice. Now, if you remember from Sorcerer's Apprentice, they said the words Primerlinian like 100,000 times throughout that movie. That's like a conservative estimate.
Yeah.
And the Hungry Rabbit Jumps is probably like equal, if not more, than that.
Yeah, it's got to be at least double. They say it so many times.
There's so many times. And they never really like fully explain what it means. They kind of like say like, well, H stands for like humility or something, and J stands for justice, and like what?
Yeah. Yeah, because they find that, you know, it sort of does investigative journalism thriller, but, like, it does a shitty job of that, too.
Right, which is what you wanted from Venom, actually, if I recall.
From Venom, yes. give me Searchlight. Spotlight? What was the Spotlight? Searchlight's the studio.
give me
Spotlight, just, like, with Venom in it. That would be dope. Yeah, so he, like, uncovers the journalist that... The sex offender, quote unquote, turns out to be like a muckraking journalist about to expose this vigilante ring.
Right.
And he finds this book, like the title is like the HJR or whatever. Like, I forget what the actual title is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they decide to transcribe that into The Hungry Rabbit Jumps because it's the letters are the same, but like, what? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because this movie was originally called The Hungry Rabbit Jumps, which I think would have been a very bad title for this this movie. Like, I get why they would have called it that because they say it over and over again, but like, it's a dumb phrase. Like, I would rather watch a movie called Seeking Justice. I think they made the right call, even though Seeking Justice is a pretty generic title that could be applied to any movie. Like, The Hungry Rabbit Jumps is not a title that tells you what happens in like what this movie is about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree that Seeking Justice is a much better title.
Yeah.
And the first couple times we hear Hungry Rabbit Jumps, I was like, ooh, this is an interesting... Like, because it's like a passcode they use for each other,
yes.
Right? Like, when you kill that guy, call this number and say the Hungry Rabbit Jumps.
Right.
And it's like, ooh, that's like a weird, mysterious, clandestine, you know... like it's on the level of, like, The Eagle Has Landed, though. Like, it's pretty lame.
Yeah.
you know. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, maybe it's going to change and there's going to be some weird thing with all these phrases are going to mean something. But, like, nope. It's the same phrase a million times over and over and over again.
Yes. I do want to talk about the dead journalist, actually. Because, I mean, the scene where he and Cage, like, kind of fight is pretty funny. Because just the way that happens, I guess the journalists thought that Cage was part of the gang or whatever. And technically Cage was, because he was supposed to be there to kill him. But Cage was trying to just talk to him. And the guy just, like, throws his bike at him, and then they get into a fight. And then the guy, like, tries to hit Cage and jumps over the railing as he's doing it, and then dies. Which is pretty funny. And then later, Cage goes to a very Irish memorial for this dead journalist.
The most Irish.
Like, nobody,
like, bordering on racist, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit. And nobody seemed, like, sad that the dude died, either. You know? Like, it seemed like it was a pretty big party. Like, it was an excuse to just go drinking. Which, like, you know, Irish memorial, like, sure. But it was still a little weird.
Yeah, that whole scene on the underpass over the under the bridge, or whatever, wherever they are, it just was, like, just made me think of Space Mutiny, the Mystery Science Theater episode. Where it's just, like, loading up a railing death. Here we go.
Yep.
Which, I mean, they specifically tell Cage to kill him by pushing him over the railing, so it's, like, not quite fair, but...
Right.
On my part. But it's really lame, so I couldn't help but think of it.
Yeah, definitely. I do like, at the beginning of the movie, you see Cage and Joan just hanging out, like, before she gets raped. And, you know, they're at, like, Mardi Gras. And I feel like just them partying was, like, more compelling than anything in the actual movie. Like, Cage seemed like he was having fun. He had the mask on, he was dancing. Like, I was into that. Like, that
seemed
fun.
Yeah, they're, like, throwing beads around and, like, telling their first date story or whatever.
Yeah, like why couldn't I just watch, like, a Before Sunrise of those two characters at Mardi Gras, you know?
That would have been amazing. Instead, we get this dumb movie.
Yeah, and I feel like... You know, the way it treats the assault on January Jones, I don't know, it felt like iffy to me. I don't know. I mean, you're doing, like, yeah, double no. take, which means, like...
I didn't mean, like, I think you had the wrong reaction, as in, like, yeah, you think?
Right, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, I'm finding it hard to put into words, but yeah, iffy is understating it, I feel like.
Yeah.
Just the way, I feel like, because it makes it all about Cage and not really about her. Like, there's a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a little bit where you see, like, she feels unsafe and she wants to buy a gun and stuff like that. And that comes back at the end of the movie where she shoots Guy Pearce and he dies. But, like, other than that, you get, like, nothing out of January Jones. Like, if this is, you know, she was the one who was assaulted, but the story is all about Cage.
Yeah, it's all about how her sexual assault changes his life.
Right.
Like, what?
Right. And, like, there's definitely, like, obviously, he's part of this. Like, this movie's about Cage doing this whole thing. But, like, I feel like you got to give something more to January Jones' character in this movie. You know, there's got to be more to it than that, other than her just being scared because Nicolas Cage is stuck in this situation. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess she gets the, like... The revenge of killing Guy Pearce, you know, kind of like that moment of agency. But we just spent an hour and 45 other minutes where she's not doing anything.
Right.
And then for 5 minutes at the end, she does a thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was unfortunate to see. But I did want to actually mention one thing, which is that Cage is at school when he's all stressed out and, like, they think he killed the guy. Or this is actually, I think the guy had just died and he goes to school, or he, like, meant to kill the guy but then didn't or whatever, but he goes to school and he gets all stressed out and he punches a student in the face, and he only gets suspended for it. that's like grounds for, like, immediate firing, right? Like, that's there's no, like, coming back from that, right?
I wonder how much of that is supposed... I'm gonna give this movie way too much credit.
Okay.
Because then we find out that Jimmy is part of the, like, thing, and he got the pull to get him released from prison and stuff. But, like, nah, he should
have been fired. 100%. Yeah. Although I do like when that comes back and Cage is in the school, like, by himself, and then the students are there vandalizing, and it's the kid that he punched, and Cage, like, kind of scares him off. He spooks him.
he's like,
oh, what are they getting you for jail for, Cage? And he's like, murder.
And they, like, take a step back. It's so lame.
It's pretty funny. But yeah, like, Jimmy is his best friend, the guy from Lost, and, you know, he starts off as a good guy, right? He's a good guy with Cage, and then it turns out he's actually part of the organization, too, and it's like, how deep does this organization go? But then he's a good guy again at the very end, and then he dies. So there's that.
So, don't be a good guy is the moral of the story.
I guess.
I also want to point out and see if you felt this way also. This felt like it was edited like a YouTube video.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because there's a lot of, like, they're running on the side of the highway, right? He's being chased by T-Dog. and it like will zoom in on that part of the frame, and it like you can tell it was a larger frame that they like pan zoomed into and
right.
then moved back out into the wide shot. And I was like, this is like what YouTube videos do. Like, what is this shit?
Right.
This doesn't make any sense.
This is like I'm watching an amateur parkour video on
yeah.
YouTube right now. Yeah.
Where's the weird Russian guy doing backflips?
But yeah, and I do want to ask, why does the end of this movie take place at a monster truck rally? Like, it's such a weird locale.
This very right. much feels like there's a couple other things that I can't put my finger on exactly, where it just feels like product placement. Like, they must have got a deal to shoot at the Superdome.
Maybe.
And they, like, must have got a deal to shoot in that abandoned mall. Because, like, why go to the Superdome to just leave it? Like, it doesn't, make any sense.
Right.
There's a couple other, like, lingering shots on like, the Cadillac logo on the Escalade he gets for some reason. Which, right. that was pretty funny, actually, how he gets the Cadillac. But, like, you know, there's a lot of things like that that just feel, like, really ham-fisted.
Yeah,
product placement shots. So
yeah.
maybe it's that. I don't know.
Could be.
Like, yeah. Why go there to leave? Like,
yeah,
you
like,
leave it immediately.
Yeah, just go there. And luck. It was very lucky that January Jones happened to be being held hostage in the abandoned mall, which is right next door to the Superdome.
Yeah, weird.
Just like by coincidence, like they go to the Superdome, and then he's like, "Where's my wife?" And he's like, "Oh, she's right next door. Let's go."
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
all right, cool. Like,
That's
why
neat.
Didn't we just go there? But, yeah, also, I do want to mention one of my favorite things in the movie is that Cage explicitly tells January Jones to not go with anybody after he fills her in on what's going on. He's like, don't go with anybody you don't know. I'll be back soon, like, and all that. And then he leaves. And then the first thing she does is she goes with somebody that she doesn't know into a car.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that.
And then, I mean, she figures it out, and she like, pepper sprays the guys and runs away. But it was still like, come on.
He just told you.
yeah, I did want to say I thought the highway chase with T-Dog was kind of fun. I did kind of enjoy it, even though it was like shot like a stupid parkour video. Like, you know, I had a decent amount of fun with it. It was all right.
Yeah, I also want to... Yeah, it was okay. I do want to point out, too, that this movie takes place in that weird, like, in-between technology phase of the world. Where, like, everyone has Blackberries and we're watching really shitty grainy videos.
Yes.
That, like, are meant to be very important, like, intel.
Right.
Or, like, when Cage gets the DVD and he plays it in the DVD player in the Escalade, like...
Right.
What? That's bizarre.
Yes. Yeah, that was really something. Also, I also wanted to bring up, there's a guy, probably like an hour and like 20 minutes ish into the movie or whatever, a guy comes up to Cage and tries to kill him, and it's another guy who's also like being blackmailed by this organization, like they killed the guy who killed his sister or something, so he owes them a favor, so he's gonna kill Cage, and he thinks Cage is a pedophile or something, and I was watching that, and I was like, this guy is living the exact same movie as Nicolas Cage right now.
Yeah.
I want to see this guy's movie. What is his story? Because he's just in that one scene, and then he's gone. You never see him again. And we know that the organization, by the end of this movie, is still around. Like, Cage didn't destroy them. He killed Guy Pearce, or January Jones killed Guy Pearce. But, like, the organization is still around, because, like, Xander Berkeley is part of it. And he's, like, you know, the lieutenant. He's like, yeah, well, you know, we're covering this up, but you guys are free to go and all that. Like, water under the bridge is basically what it all is. And so, but then at the end of the movie... Cage passes on the research to one of the journalists that he met at the party, and he's like, yeah, we want to continue the research that the dead guy was doing, and then he looks at the papers like, hungry rabbit jumps, eh?
Yeah,
and walks away, and Cage is like, no, and then it cuts to credits.
It would have been better if he had that, like, just the end of Planet of the Apes reaction. Just, like, falls to his knees.
You maniacs! The hungry rabbit jumps!
Yeah, I mean, the way that ends, like, is he just dead? Like, why would that guy just not kill Cage? Like, that
right?
doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, I guess the movie's over then. I guess I think it's fine. I think Cage is okay.
It's probably okay.
Like,
you're right.
It seemed like the organization was like, all right, yeah, Guy Pearce was a dick, like, whatever, just... We'll leave you guys be, you leave us be, and it'll all be okay, or whatever.
Yeah, it seems like that, but then Cage, like, goes to the press with the evidence to expose them.
Yeah, true.
Which is the whole reason they killed the other guy. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, but maybe because he gave all the evidence to this guy who was part of the organization, that there's no reason to kill Cage, because Cage doesn't have the evidence now.
Maybe. You're right. I mean, I might be thinking too much into it.
Maybe. I think we're definitely thinking way too much into Seeking Justice.
I need a Seeking Tustis.
Seeking Tustis.
I tried so hard.
Or the sequel to that, Threaking Justice.
Damn it. Yes.
I also like the part where Guy Pearce says the name of the movie in the movie. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. Imagine if it was named Hungry Rabbit Jumps, though.
I mean, yeah.
Just would have said it. They would have said it
over and over again. Yeah.
The whole time.
The whole movie. Also, I want to mention the scene where after Cage doesn't kill the guy the first time or whatever, he and January Jones are out to dinner and Guy Pearce shows up. He pretends to be like one of Cage's buddies from college or something. Mm-hmm. And he just comes in and is like, yeah, I'm in town. My friend's wife was murdered.
Such a shame.
Such a shame. Wouldn't want anything like that to happen to you, Nicolas Cage. It's like such an unsubtle way to go about it. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. And January Jones' character is just, like, totally oblivious.
Yeah, like, completely, like, wow, it's such a shame about his friend's wife being murdered, right?
I think that might actually be the line that she said.
She actually says that. That's a real thing. Which is such a weird thing to say, because it's like, that should go without saying. You know?
Oh, my God.
But anyway.
This movie's so dumb.
It's real dumb. And it's weird, because it's like, it creates this, like, complex world and organization that it just does absolutely nothing with and has no idea what to do with. But anyway, yeah, that is Seeking Justice. I think that's pretty much all the stuff I had, Mike. Unless you had anything else, I think we should move on.
Yeah, that's basically it. Oh, actually, no. I do want to say when Cage's character digs into two scenes real quick. When he goes to visit the newspaper, the reporter's desk.
Yeah.
And the woman doing, like, the crossword, or she's writing her own article or whatever.
Yeah.
And she, like, has... She thinks Cage is, like, some guy sneaking in, breaking into her office, right? And has, like, the weirdest reaction to it. Where she, like, slowly gets up from her desk and slowly walks away and slowly walks to security guard.
Yes.
And then he's gone. Instead of just, like, calling the security guard.
Yeah. Well, my favorite part about that scene, though, is before that happens, she looks up and hears some rustling, doesn't, like, pay attention to who it is, and she's like, hey, how do you do this grammar problem or whatever? Like, how do you capitalize this or something? Yeah. And then, luckily, Cage is an English teacher, so he just gives a whole speech about grammar.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Tells her exactly what to do. And she's like, oh, okay, thanks. And then she realizes that he shouldn't be there.
And then the other scene, I wish the movie was just Clerks, but with this guy. And that's the guy that is the gas station attendant where the newspaper, the reporter, like, has stashed all of his evidence in the storage lockers. That actor was amazing. I don't know who he is or what he's doing, but he was great in that one scene.
Yeah.
Where Cage has to ask, like, he bribes him to get the...
Right.
Which locker he's in.
Yeah, it's that one, the one scene gas station attendant, like in Wayne's World 2 when Charlton Heston comes in.
Yeah.
Just that great actor who comes in, just blows you away.
Exactly.
Anyway, all right, so I think that about wraps up our thoughts on Seeking Justice. This is not a very good movie. It's kind of fun to watch in, like, I know this is pretty bad kind of way, but, like, kind of compelling.
Yeah. Like, and that's so close. Swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss. Anyway, let's move on to some Letterboxd reviews for Seeking Justice. I think these are all Letterboxd and not Netflix. I got all Letterboxd because they were better. Here's a half-star review of Seeking Justice from Letterboxd. If you've never seen a film before in your entire life, this review could contain spoilers. Otherwise, you're just fine. Really, you've seen this already. If you're a Cage fan, just don't watch this. This film probably doesn't deserve such a low rating, but I'm seeing red now as the insanely stupid script of this film just pissed me off so much. Let me give you a few examples. Bad guy. Do you want us to take care of the guy who raped and beat up your wife? Cage. What do you mean? You know where he is right now? Bad guy. Yes, there is a time issue though, so don't hesitate. Cage thinks for 5 seconds. No. Bad guy walks away. Cage thinks 5 seconds more. Wait! And looks at the bad guy with puppy dog eyes, which say, please kill that bastard. Bad guy. Right. If you want us to do this, go to the vending machine and buy 2 candy bars. Then we'll know. Hold on. What? Hello, time issue? Can't Cage just tell you? Didn't he just tell you? What follows is an intensely suspenseful scene in which Cage buys candy. Riveting stuff. Here's a two-star review from Letterboxd. Nick Vember rolls on with Seeking Justice. If I'd seen this in theaters, I'd have been seeking a refund. I kid, the Cage, I kid. Who is he this time? High school English teacher turned reluctant vigilante Will Gerard. Another New Orleans Nick Cage movie. He even gives an embarrassing who dat in this one.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
A few decent action scenes. I mean, this is coming from the director of Cocktail and Dante's Peak, after all. But the story is laughable, and Cage is sleepwalking through this. Not even a climax at the Superdome during a monster truck rally could save this movie. Caginess, 2 out of 10. Nick is playing the straight man in this crazy, convoluted world. He never gets fully on board with the Fight Club-esque vigilante network he becomes entangled in. No one wants everyman Nicolas Cage. Here's a one-star review from Letterboxd. Watching this quote-unquote film is like eating thin slices of yellow plastic instead of enjoying real cheese.
Wow, oddly specific.
Yeah, I think he's done that before. I think that's why he knows. Mm-hmm. Here's a 1.5-star review from Letterboxd. I was A, ill, and B, tired. Plus, it was 2 days ago from this writing, so I'll just list the qualities this film has. A, a shitty Guy Pearce, or just Guy Pearce. 2, a man named Jimmy. 3, a bland Nicolas Cage. I know, the impossible. He is no fun here. 4, January Jones. She's flat as a matchstick man's foot. 5, a convoluted plot that gets more ridiculous by the second. A tense scene involves buying 2 candy bars, specifically 2, from a vending machine while a policeman looks on. What is he going to say? Hey, you can't legally buy candy here and disrupt no one. 6, textbook cinematography that screams, rule of thirds, see, we know it! 7, hey, you're raped? You'll get over it. Huh? Yeah, just magically, get over it. Yep. 8, Google image search, use it. 9, Google instead of Bing, use it. This film is cliched bullshit, but fun to laugh at. Highly inept in its execution of a narrative with risky potential, Seeking Justice goes wrong in every way, employing an ill-fitting and incompetent cast with some terribly non-suspenseful scenes. Here's a 2.5-star review of Seeking Justice. Hungry Rabbit Jumps. Nobody cares! The last part was in...
That's it?
That's the whole review.
I appreciate that you sort of delivered that like Jerry Seinfeld.
Hungry Rabbit Jumps! What's it jumping for?
God damn it.
And finally got one more. Here's a 2-star review of Seeking Justice. I refuse to miss any Nick Cage movie. He is the strangest, most fascinating train wreck of a sometimes brilliant actor currently in movies. I'd love to know how Cage picks his movies. He makes like 4 a year, and I'd love to see what he turns down. When he's bad, he's so amazingly good, and I still say he's god-awful, this can't be a real performance, in Schumacher's unfathomable Trespass is one for the history books. It's hard to tell if Cage even gives a shit in half these movies, and he has to be confused half the time as to what movie he's even in, or what genre. Thankfully, this mysterious straight-to-video Cage starrer didn't slip by me, but it gave me little fodder in my strange, ongoing obsession of psychologically deconstructing this man through his movies. Did we write this review? Cage is oddly subdued here and is trying to play it straight. More of a quiet intensity role, and he's terrible, but mostly because the movie is. I was hoping to see one Cage freak out here, and the closest he comes is an awkward dance party at the beginning, but it goes downhill from there. Only 1.5 on the Cage weirdo factor. The movie does have an interesting concept and is strangely watchable, which only means I wasn't bored. It's just executed so poorly, and the last half is so awkward and clearly made up on the fly. I do love Guy Pearce, though, who has the potential to become his own type of Nick Cage. I think he's one of the most interesting actors working today, but he always gets stuck in this junk. At least he elevated the whole thing, which I can't say the same thing for Cage, who barely tries here. He was probably just trying to get a quick buck. He was probably just trying to get a quick bit of pocket change to buy a human skull on eBay or something. Which, to be fair, is probably accurate. So
yeah.
I think that about wraps up our thoughts on Seeking Justice. Mike, it sounds like we were not fans of this
movie. Yeah, not great. Not a whole lot to say either.
Not a whole lot to say about this one, but that's okay. Where can we find you online this week, Mike?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter.
And you can find me at M. Smith Film Blog on Twitter and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review, and you can help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next Complete Works as Nicolas Cage reunites with the director of Con Air to basically just rip off Taken, 2012's Stolen. You ready for this, Mike?
I can't wait.
I actually own Stolen on DVD. I'm very excited to finally watch it.
Wow.
I got, literally, my parents bought Stolen for me on DVD for my birthday like 3 years ago when we started this podcast.
Holy shit.
Because we were doing this podcast, and I was like, I can't wait to watch this in fucking forever when I...
Yeah.
When we finally get to it, and now it's finally happened. So
it's
pretty
happened.
Excited about that. Plus, keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we're talking Halloween next week. Mike, very excited about that one. So yes. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Think about that while you're leaving Las Vegas!
Boom!
Nick Cage, motherfucker!
Boom!
Nick Cage, motherfucker!